So this is a joint work with David Miller and Hugh Price, following up on work.
So it is he?
It is him.
Sounds like David Miller.
Ah, okay, there it is. Yes, I'll start the word. Strikes again. And this following up on work with Hugh and Pete Evans. And basically this was what I've been working on for the last month or so of my sabbatical. At Sydney, which is just about over there. The starting point is the climate path here. And suppose that's all we have, that's the only formulation of quantum mechanics that we have. Does that, alone looking at it, tell us anything about what's really going on here? And a lot of people have the instinct that, well, it gives all the same results as the Schrodinger picture or the Heisenberg picture, so therefore it can't tell us anything new looking at it independently. But that's not really true, because the way that calculation works is quite different. And I think there's a lot of insight to be gained, especially if you write a path integral just in terms of what you can observe, which are the joint probabilities between, say, any initial measured state and a final measured state. This is not the unitarily involved state, but actually the state you measure. And all you need to do is combine the propagation with the Born rule in one big term. There's no a priori reason to split it out into these two steps like there is in the Schrodinger. It's just this one big equation. In fact, if this was all you had, you might, and someone said, well, it matters what order you do these integrals, you'd think, well, that's crazy. It's just a mathematical choice what order to do the integrals, whether you do the Born rule first or propagate first. It's just this big nasty equation. And it's really not so nasty when you consider that what's going on here is classical. Everything between these two states is represented by a classical picture, this classical action. And, where does the quantum come in? The quantum comes in that you still, from these joint probabilities, need to know what the possible discrete outcomes are, so that you can then take these joint probabilities and convert it into a conditional probability in the usual manner. And that's sort of the Achilles heel of the purely Lagrangian approach quantum mechanics, and that's another story. But assuming that you have these outcomes, that's all you need. This classical picture is enough to give you all the joint probabilities you can measure. Another reason for looking at this is that it's the one formalism that most naturally generalizes to relative disagreements, because the actions of the nice scalar, you have the parameterization invariance that comes naturally in these action principles. And now you're interested in a Lagrangian density integrated over space-time, but it's still the classical action. In fact, if anything, the equation looks simpler, where you do this functional integral over all intermediate field configurations. But, of course, it's a lot harder to calculate. And yet you can stare at this math all day long, and you're not going to come up with any obvious interpretation. What's happening between measurements? Well, everything's happening between measurements, and if you try to assign a probability to each individual thing, the square here messes you up, and you don't get a reasonable interpretation. So instead of staring at this map directly, there's an indirect approach that you can look at the symmetries of the path integral and use it to motivate what's really going on. And I'm just going to start assuming that we're looking for a realist picture. And at the end, I'll have a little more to say about this assumption. But for now, let's just assume there is some realistic picture. I want to know what's happening between measurements. And I assume these quantum field theory probabilities are correct, which probably a few people would dispute. And I'm just going to look at the symmetries of the path integral as a guide to what's really going on. Now, the nice thing about the path integral is this quantum field theory picture, because any two experiments with the same classical action are inevitably going to have the same observable correlations, because that's the constant action is the only thing that goes into that expression that gives you the joint probabilities. Now, what is this trying to tell us? Well, why do these same observable correlations arise? That's the question. And obviously, if there were two experiments with the same ethon ontology, that's also going to give rise to the same observable correlations. So the big question is, does this imply that? Is it, if you have two experiments with the same, well, detailed action, so the same classical Lagrangian density, is it true that, therefore, these two experiments are going to have the same ontology? In fact, we can raise that to a well-motivated hypothesis. Say you've got two experiments with something called an action duality, In other words, there's some well-defined space-time transformation between the two experimental geometries that maps the classical Lagrangian density of one to the classical Lagrangian density of the other. And the hypothesis is simply that the ontology has to have the same map. Has to also map between them under the exact same space-time transformation. And basically, you can almost think of this like a diffeomorphism invariance for a quantum ontology, which is actually one of the best motivations for this, because as you look for additional evidence why this is a reasonable hypothesis, and you shouldn't just trivially dismiss it just like based on one of its implications, people use this in GR. I mean, this is sort of the answer. There are different takes on the Einstein-Pohl argument, whether if you reparameterize things, whether it's a different state of affairs or not, but everyone agrees that if you start talking about with Lagrangian density, that the ontology is going to follow that Lagrangian density around space-time, and that's sort of the solution to the Einstein-Pohl argument.
What is that?
The whole argument is that if there's regions in space-time where there are no fields, it's just gravity, there are multiple solutions by reparameterizing the space-time there. And Einstein was really puzzled by this because basically you have multiple solutions that seem all to be different. And finally he realized, no, they're all the same, because if you start talking about with reparameterizing, basically reality sort of follows the reparameterization. Very, very well. There's another place this is used just as a calculation tool, and that's in quantum field theory itself, this thing called crossing symmetry, where if you have an outgoing particle and some scattering experiment, and you replace it with an incoming antiparticle, you get the same probabilities of the scattering. And that's because the action's the same. So people say, well, it's the same action, so it's the same probabilities. And this is a calculation tool, but people don't really ascribe any ontological significance to it. Maybe a better reason to consider fish is you can say, well, what if it were false? Is it even possible for it to be false? And it is. And someone could construct an argument that this hypothesis is false. But what would happen if it were false is you would have two experiments with the same classical action that would still have identical probabilities, right? Because quantum field theory is still correct, we're assuming. And it's the same probabilities for the same mathematics. Every step in the mathematics would be identical to get those probabilities. And yet, you would argue, well, but there are different reasons. There are different underlying reasons why those are the same probabilities. And maybe you could build a picture like this, but it's far from a trivial statement to say this might even be true, especially if you take probably best known case of looking at symmetries to inspire ontology, going all the way back to 1905, when Einstein complained about E&M, that you had asymmetries of the ontology that weren't evident, that weren't inherent in the phenomenon. And that's basically what you need if it were false. You would have these symmetries between these actual dual experiments that weren't borne out by an underlying ontology. So that's the motivation for the hypothesis. What's good about this is if you accept it, it's a principle, and it constrains realistic interpretations. Because if you have a realistic interpretation of two action-dual experiments, you can compare and see, is it true that they map to each other under the same space-time transformation? And that's what the latter half of the talk is all about. Even what I like about it is that it forces you to think about things in space-time, because that's where the Lagrangian density lives. It's even if you have multiple particles and multiple fields, it's still the classical action. It's still existing in space-time, so you're thinking about what's happening in space-time rather than in configuration space. And because it's the classical action, it doesn't rule out adding new features, but it does strongly constrain any non-classical elements. So you can add a non-classical communication channel in one experiment, so long as I also add something in its dual. And that's a strong constraint. You can't just choose some kind of experiments to add new non-classical things and not add them also in their actual experiments. But what I think is the strongest reason to consider this principle is it's constructive. You can build ontologies with it. For example, suppose I want a generally covariant ontology. I use a generally covariant Lagrangian to generate. If I want a local ontology, I pick a Lagrangian dependent on its on local fields and its local derivatives. I can even build a new ontology. Suppose I had two experiments that were actually dual to each other, And one of them, everyone pretty much agreed on what was happening. And the other one, like a double equality violation, there's no real realistic model of what's going on. If these are actually dual to each other, you just apply this map, this space-time transformation, you take, or it has to be a realistic ontology, it has to live in space-time, and you can map it onto a realistic ontology of this other experiment. And we'll have an example just coming up as well. So, let's start with an example here, a double interferometer. This first half is basically what you just saw in the previous talk. You send a single photon through a single interferometer. And of course, if you put detectors here, we just saw that the outcome probabilities strongly depend on what alpha is. It's hopefully not obvious, it's not obvious to me looking at this, that when you add a second interferometer here, you plug through the map and you discover that even though alpha shows up in the wave function here, when you use the Born rule to calculate the probabilities, you're back to a 50-50 chance of an A or B outcome, regardless of the setting alpha. So why would that be? We'll talk about that in a little bit. It's just sort of this weird fact of the map of adding the second interferometer. Now, what about the path interval type way of thinking about things? Here, you coarse grain into possible paths in different phases, and some, that's basically the sum over history's picture. And there are four paths to get from C to A, and if I want to calculate the joint probability of a C input in an A outcome, I have to sum over the phases. You get a pi over two phase from a reflection, you get an alpha phase from passing through here, and you discover, sure enough, alpha disappears. And here there's a little more insight as to why it disappears. It disappears because the two paths that pass through here and pick up an alpha end up with opposite phases, and these two terms cancel. And you can see sort of exactly where the alpha vanishes from the joint probability. To get the conditional probability, you then have to look at the other output and normalize it the usual way, and you get a 50-50 chance. Of course, these two pictures give the same results. They have to. But it's a different underlying mathematics. So, what's an actual rule to this? The time reverse. So here, comparing these two experiments, all I'm doing is moving the A and B to the left and the C and D to the right. And by doing that, by time reversing the phase shift element pops over here. And now, hopefully, everyone can look at this and see exactly why alpha doesn't matter. There's no alpha here at all, because if you put the photon in here, you get total destructive interference. There's zero wave function that goes this way. And yes, of course, obviously, alpha is irrelevant. And now you, again, get a 50-50 chance. But even though the math is different, that these experiments are actually dual, we knew from the fact that the classical action determines this probability, they have to have the same correlations. The correlations between what happens on this side and what happens on this side have to be the same for these two experiments. And just because this math is different does not mean that there's necessarily a different underlying reason. In fact, if you look at the path integral, it's explicitly identical, right? Now you run the path from A to C or C to A, it doesn't matter. You get exactly the same mathematics both ways. You don't have this weird thing where the mathematics is different, depending on which way you calculate. And of course, it has to be identical because it's just the time reversing gel there. You're just looking at these integral reaction over the space time region. So, what sort of ontology do these two pictures imply? We have these two action dual experiments, and you can ask the question, well, does anything pass through E or not? Does anything pass through the phase lane? And if you're going to do a scientific literal interpretation that this wave function is really what's there, and that's my realistic picture, I just can simply ask the question, does it equal zero at the phase shift element? And I get different answers. Here, some of the wave function does pass through here, and here it's zero. So I get a different ontological, a different realistic picture if I interpret the wave function as what's really going on. Whether or not there is a natural interpretation of the path integral is a big question. You could ask, sort of, does the partial amplitude of all the paths do E sum to zero? And whatever question you ask, you're going to get the same answer, because the mathematics is explicitly identical. The point here is that if you accept this hypothesis, that there should be a duality between these two pictures, you should be able to map any ontology here onto any ontology here, just via a time reversal, this is a flat contradiction. You can't have, if Fish is correct, you can't have different answers for these questions, for these two experiments. They're actually dual to each other, and you must I'll have the same answer from the easterner. So right away, you can see a sidewalk, even a single particle wave function can't be interpreted as what's really going on if you accept this hypothesis. So is there a way to think about this? I said, well, suppose we accept the conventional picture that nothing passes through E for this experiment. Suppose that's our ontology. Now, our ontology is that, well, if it comes in here, we know, and say we detect it in C, we know that that's the path that it takes. What's the corresponding ontology for A1? If this is true, we must be able to take that logic and transfer it over here. So basically now, you can do the same logic, but you need retrodiction. And Lazzi and Hardy talked about this in the same experimental context without the phase delay element, the double interferometer in 95. And basically, if you measure that A is the output, you basically then mentally back up and say, well, where did that photon come from? Ah, it must have come from this path here, right? It's sort of this logic in reverse. And then you can say, ah, therefore, I can retrodict that the photon took this path. But it's a retrodiction. It's not anything you know until after you make this measurement, because if you measure B, you could not conclude this. So the dual logic of this, applying Fish over here, requires retrodiction. If you believe this picture, you must have a retrodicted picture over here, which is another reason why standard quantum mechanics can't be realistically interpreted here, because there are no inaccessible parameters to retrodict in standard quantum mechanics. And the only way you're going to have anything to retrodict, given a final outcome, is by having invariance. So Fish is almost demanding, if you believe nothing passes through the phase, like I'm looking at your realistic ontology, Fish sort of forces you into a hidden variable law by applying this principle. Even more impressive, I think, is what happens if you consider this Bellamy quality violating experiment. This is a variant of Sindo-Sorkin paper in 91, where the source is two photons that are which way entangled. It's not polarization entangled, not phase entangled. It's just which way entangled. So they have to go in opposite directions. They either take both green paths or both red paths. And basically, this is Allison and this is Bob. They each have their own experimental settings. And you end up violating Bellamy quality. Here's the Sindo-Sorkin derivation of it. It turns out you can explicitly calculate the phase delay element for the green paths. And some of them get the action for there. The red paths, some of them get the action for here. And then you square this and find the joint probability is this typical singlet joint probability that violates the Bellamy quality. And they point out that, wait a second, how do we do this? How do we violate the Bellamy quality by only doing local path calculations? And the answer is that the action itself is non-local, right? It's an integral over space-time. So you can sort of expect this Bellamy quality violating behavior to arise if you're using the action as the fundamental element that's generating these probabilities, because it isn't like non-local, right? It's integral over space time. So there's a nice picture. The question is there an action dual picture? And amazingly, there's an action dual picture with only one photon. So here's how you get it. So this is now, this diagram, and on the space-time diagram, because we're thinking about space-time, right? The Grandi density lives in space-time. Here's space-time. We have our source here, our which way entangled source, our detectors later in time, and what we need is a space-time transformation that preserves the Grandi density. One such thing would be a complete time reversal, but that's not what we want. What we want is actually take the left side of the space-time volume and time reverse that around this source as a pivot point. But what you end up with is this. This is a transformation of Lagrangian, the possible Lagrangian density, basically time reversing this around that point, and you end up with this picture. Now you need to think a little bit more carefully about what A and B are. Here A and B are outputs, either A fires or B fires. And it's not under experimental control, it's a measure. Here, by putting it at the input, it's now an experimental choice. You're going to send a single photon in through A or B. And here we have control, and here we don't, but that's sort of our problem, not not the universe's problem. And what happens in the middle here, I told you, was which way entangled, which meant the photons had to go in opposite directions. That just corresponds to here, the not having a sudden shift from one line to another, it just goes in a straight line, is what the condition corresponds to, which is sort of what you would expect from by doing the path of the patient, right? So here's a one photon geometry. Instead of having two photons accumulating half the phase, you can have a single photon accumulating double the phase, but it has the exact same classical action as this picture. And sure enough, so now we're back to our old 2D diagram, not showing the time here. You put a single photon into this device, and with no crossover probability at this point, and you calculate what are the joint probabilities between your choice of input and your detected output. And via exactly the same mathematics, you get exactly the same probability for exactly the same reason. I mean, there's no, it's not possible for it to be different. These are actually real experiments. You must have the same correlations. Now, is this bad? You violate, nobody talks about a single particle Bell-Lee quality violation, right? And yet, these correlations violate the Bell-Lee quality, but this, it's expected. It's expected in this case. Why do you expect a Bell-Lee quality violation? Because you expect the intermediate states, anything here, of could depend on alpha, right? Alpha, it's the photon has just has one path of it, has to pass through alpha here. And so now we have these intermediate states that depend on a measurement setting, right? That's intuitive that would be the case. And so whether our intuition is right is another question. But we can assume our intuition is right and do the dual transformation back to the Bell-Lee quality violating geometry and come up with a realistic interpretation based on our intuitions of this picture. So here are the two pictures. Here's the, say, A measurement and, say, a C or D measurement here. Say, A and C, A measure in Bell-Lee quality violating two photon case. Here's the one photon experiment where you put in a single photon. We consider this the correlations that emerge from here ordinary, even though they're identical to the correlations over here. Because we say, well, obviously the intermediate states here depend on alpha. And we say over here, this is spooky action at a distance, because obviously the initial states of the photon can't possibly depend on alpha, because that's in the fusion. So that's our intuition. These intuitions are not acting rule to each other. If you accept Fish as a principle, you are guided. So you must have a dual ontology. You must be able to take your ontology here and map it over here via that space-time transformation. So suppose our intuition is right here. Suppose nobody seems to argue this point, then say there's a weird non-local influence in time here. Well, a few people. So any ontology that agrees with this ordinary picture, then you just apply that space-time transformation to this ontology that says, well, what's happening in here depends on alpha. And you come to the conclusion that Fish implies that whatever the initial parameters are in tidying these photons here, which I've already said Fish implies have to have some big variables in them, we can say they depend on alpha as well. So you get yourself a retrocausal interpretation. And it's exactly the same correlations now for exactly the same reasons. This seems ordinary, this seems spooky to us because we don't like this retrocausal business. But at least the math is now have the same duality that the Lagrangian density has under transformations between these two experiments. And there are more discussions of that in this paper. It's going to be in the British Journal of Philosophy of Science on the retrocausal side of things. So this is a big challenge, I think, in that even if you're a non-realist or an anti-realist, presumably, most of you would be anti-realist because you would think a realist model would be impossible because of various no-go theorems, such as we saw in the previous talk. But if you can build general realistic models that weaken those conclusions by, for example, convincing you to consider retrocausality, now you're going to weaken those no-go theorems, and there's going to be less of a reason not to be a realist about what's going on between measurements. So if you want to continue to be an anti-realist, now the new challenge is, why is this hypothesis wrong? Why wouldn't there be a dual ontology between two experiments that are acting dual? If you're a realist and you want to find a realistic picture, this is great, but there's still this big challenge that we have this crazy retrocausal implication of it, which conflicts with our intuitions. But that hasn't been hearing. Something has to go. One of our intuitions is flawed. And how are we going to use our intuition to determine which of our intuitions is flawed? What we need is a principle. We need some sort of guiding principle that we can use to tell us which of our intuitions is flawed. And it seems to me that fish might be that principle. It might, by telling us, okay, there's duality in the map. Let's enforce that duality on the same level as our ontology. If we take that as a guiding principle, it's going to tell us which of our intuitions need to go. Thanks.
Okay, do we have questions?
So you might consider the different maths that you put up, like the Schrodinger picture versus the Arthur picture, as different interpretations of quantum mechanics, because they're all giving the same answer.
We're giving the same correlations,
sure. So why should we assign something special to Parthenon interpretation?
Well, I guess what I meant to was the fact that it most easily generalizes to the relevant signatures. I guess another answer would be that if you start from that picture, you see, right at the very beginning, you see that the division between propagation and measurement might be artificial, right? It might be, if you have this nice enough double integral, by demanding that you do the integration in order, first the propagation integral, and then the measurement integral, you might see that as a choice rather than what the math is forcing us to consider.
Actually, I'd like to ask a question. I'm going to put myself into queue. As a dedicated realist, I'd actually like to take issue with the first blue point up there as the way you present that. So you say Fish provides techniques to construct general realistic models. But it seems to me that's overstating the case, is that Fish really provides a constraint upon general realistic models. So you haven't actually used it to construct an actual explicit model. You've merely said that the model has to have these properties to satisfy Fish. So it's still, presumably, it seems to me it would be an open question as to whether there does in fact exist a constructive, realistic model that actually can satisfy all the constraints of Fish.
Well, when I say construct, I mean, suppose you had never considered Richard Cartel. It had never even entered your mind that was a possibility. And you took this as a principle, and you accepted this ordinary picture, then it would lead you to construct a retrocausal model. And the previous one that led you to construct a retrodictive model with invariants. So that's what I mean by construct. I mean, you have to have a guess of what's going on in one of them before you can build the other one, it's true. So in that sense, it's more constraining. But I do think there is this constructive aspect of it where you can take one picture and map it onto the other.
This is just a follow-up on that, and it picks up on something that I thought might be useful to add. Where you had the nice table showing, and you said that the psi hunting view sort of breaks Fish, because you had a no in the A1 box and a yes in the A2 box, or the other way around. I think it's worth mentioning at that point that if you want to hang on to a psi hunting picture, you can restore the symmetry by putting in a second wave function, which is a well-known approach, and then you get symmetry. But it's also, this is why it's relevant here, it's also an illustration of precisely this technique of using Fish to guide one's ontology. Because you know, if you start with an ordinary, a symmetric picture in the ordinary sense, and restore the symmetry demanded by Fish by putting in a second wave function, there's a realistic model.
Right, I forgot to mention that, where was that? Here, that in this Lazzi and Hardy paper, they did exactly that. They considered this in the context of the Broglie bone particles retrodicting one pathway that was based on the output, and they considered a harmonic two-state model as both of those as ways of using the output to figure out which path that came on the input. And so that has been considered in this context.
Any more questions? I think we should thank our speaker and break lunch.